Yes, I was really happy. I was really proud of myself, and super proud to be the first Moroccan and Arab surfer to make it, you know, to make it to such a big league.
8 days before the season starts, you break your ankle after fighting for 10 years to get to that point. Can you tell me how that felt?
After all these years, I'm 10 days away of getting my chance and I break my ankle, the biggest injury of my career. Wow. In surfing, you need to stay in the moment, you know, wave by wave, turn by turn. If you get too much ahead, I feel like you get lost and you're really painful. I had a really bad shoulder and I did 14 hits, you know, 14 hits. So that was really intense. You're watching the sea, you're watching the ocean, you're like, okay, I'm going to do that. By the time of your hits, completely different. You know, you got to adapt to it.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Abtal, a podcast series from the National News dedicated to Arab athletes and their respective journeys towards the Paris 2024 Olympics. I'm your host, Rima Boulil, and today I'm joined by Moroccan surfer Ramzi Boukhiam, who is getting ready to compete in his second Olympics this summer. Ramzi is the first Moroccan or Arab surfer to qualify for the championship tour, which is the highest level of competition in the sport. The 30-year-old from Agadir recently clinched a silver medal at the ISA World Surfing Games in Puerto Rico to secure his Olympic spot and solidify his place among the best surfers on the planet. After enjoying an impressive junior career, Ramzi spent a decade toiling on the qualifying series before he finally clinched a place in the championship tour at the end of 2022. But injury struck and he broke his ankle just 8 days before the start of the 2023 season. In this revealing conversation, Ramzi delves deep into the highs and lows of his career, his early days in the sport, his move from Morocco to the south of France after he lost his father at the age of 12, the tough transition from juniors to the pros, and how he's hoping to make the most of his time on the championship tour this season. He shares his pride in being part of a revolutionary generation of Moroccan athletes excelling on the global stage across different sports, and is keen to inspire the next generation of young surfers back home to follow in his footsteps. Join us on this episode to find out more about Ramzi, who is eyeing gold at the Olympics this summer. Ramzi Boukhiam, thank you so much for joining me on Abtal. Yeah, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to meet you and excited to have a chat with you.
So you're in Western Australia at the moment, and I think you're getting ready for the last event on the championship tour of the WSL before the cut.
Exactly.
And as far as I understand, the cut is the field is shrunk a little bit. It starts with like 34 surfers and then they cut you down to 20 something.
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit about what the mindset is like. Is it a bit stressful entering this one knowing that you're trying to make the cut?
It is. Honestly, it is. But honestly, I've been feeling pretty well. You know, I've done a couple nice results before coming here. Then I went to Bells Beach just before here in Australia. I was feeling actually amazing, but I lost. I finished 17th, so I was pretty bummed about that. But I still have an opportunity here, you know, in Margaret. And, you know, it's a wave that kind of suits my surfing, you know, a little bit of powerful waves because I'm a big guy for surfing, for surfer. So no, I'm excited for sure. Pressure, but I try not to think too much about it. I'm right there on the bubble, but I'm positive I'll make it and I'll give my best. That's for sure.
Okay. So you started competing in the QS in the qualifying series in 2012. And then 10 years later, you managed to qualify for the championship tour at the end of 2022. I want to take you back to that moment when you found out that you finally qualified and you managed to fulfill a dream that was 10 years in the making.
Well, like you said, it was a long journey for me. Ups and downs. Yeah, pretty much 10 years surfing on the QS, which is a pretty high level too. But, you know, you want to make the tour. You know, you want to make the tour. That's the goal when you start. I mean, when I started surfing, that was my main goal. And I wasn't going to give up until I make it, you know. So, yes, I was really happy. I was really proud of myself and super proud to be the first Moroccan and Arab surfer to make it, you know, to make it to such a big league and the biggest league in my sport. So, yeah, I was super happy. And unfortunately, I broke my ankle at the start of the 2023 season. So I didn't even had one heat and I had to take the year off. So that's why it's a funny one this year for me, because I didn't know if I was going to get the injury wild card or not. So they ended up not giving it to me. So I was a replacement. So I was like, wow, maybe I need to go back to the QS. And I've, you know, without even having my chance to perform on the tour. But, you know, like I said, throughout the whole process last year, I was like, you know what, if the stars align, I felt something was going to happen positive, because I don't know, I did everything right. You know, I tried my best and I never gave up. It took a lot. It was a lot of ups and downs, a lot of downs too. It wasn't easy. But I believed it so much. And then I got my shot in Hawaii this year. And here I am trying to make the cut.
It's incredible. I want to talk a little bit more about what you just said, because 8 days before the season starts, you break your ankle after fighting for 10 years to get to that point. Can you tell me how that felt? Like, how did you deal with that? Because you were out for the year, right? It took you a whole year to get. So can you talk to me a bit more about how you managed to handle all that?
Yeah, no, that was pretty hard, honestly. But when it happened under the water, I knew it was something serious, because I really felt a big crack in my ankle. I was like, oof, I think that's pretty bad. And I swear the whole movie in my head went fast. I was like, wow, this is it. I knew. I was like, no way. Like, why? What did I do? You know, you start thinking about all these things. What did I do wrong? Like, why me? What's going on here? After all these years, I'm 10 days away of getting my chance and I break my ankle, the biggest injury of my career. Wow. It was really hard to accept it. But with the help, you know, with the right help, my friends, my family, I managed, you know, to get that thought out of my mind of why me, why all that, you know, just this is it. It's you. That's it. So what are you going to do? You're going to keep crying about it and thinking about it, or try your best to maybe, you know, go forward and get back there. You know, it's easy to say. It wasn't easy to do, because I had some down moments, honestly. But I believed, like I told you, I believed in it the whole way. And I knew I deserved my chance, and I knew, you know, it was going to give me my chance. The stars aligned, and now I had my chance. You know, I have my chance, and it's time for me to prove it and to take what's mine, hopefully.
And I understand, because I saw a lot of in the surfing, like the surfing fans and stuff, they were saying they really wanted you to get an injury wild card. And I don't know the rules behind all that. I'm not very well versed in these kind of things. But as far as I understand, you could have gotten an injury wild card, but you didn't get it. So that must have been another big blow, right? Because at what point, when do you usually know about these wild cards? Is it at the end of 2023?
Well, no, you know it right before the cut, because there's two wild cards. There is one that's gonna go for that's gonna get the injury wild card for the second half of the year and next year, and there's one other injury wild card that's just gonna get it for next year. So I knew one of the surfer was gonna get it for next year. And the second one, I mean, I thought it was going to be me, honestly. I was doing my rehab. So that was the only thing, like the only positive thing out, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. I was like, okay, it's coming. And then it didn't come. So that was probably the hardest blow I took. Because I had to, you know, I had to keep waking up at 7 and go to the rehab center every day, after knowing that I wasn't going to get the wild card, that maybe I was going to go back to the I call it the jungle, the QS, the war zone. So I was like, wow. But yeah, like I told you, it wasn't easy, but I went through it. Mm-hmm. And my friends and my family, they were, you know, super, super positive next to me, pushing me, you know, positive thinking, positive vibes. And I pushed through .
Okay. Tell me a little bit about that jungle, because... I mean, in every sport, usually you have some form of challenger tour or something when then you're trying to make it to the top one. And that's super competitive. Everyone is dying to make it to that top one. What's it like in surfing?
Well, man, the QS, it's really hard, honestly, especially the top part of the QS, like the challenger series and stuff. It's like, honestly, it's really high level. It's pretty much, well, pretty much the guys that are on tour, you know, that sometimes they fall down and they're back there and, you know, they go up. So it's a pretty high level thing. There's not a huge gap, you know, and the waves, that's the hardest thing, is that the waves are completely different. It's super, you know, like the challengers, you surf sometimes in like very bad waves, you know, because, you know, the waiting periods are shorter for the events. On the CT, you have 10-day waiting period for 4 days of contest. So you're able to pick and choose the nicest day. And the QS, no, you come, you rock up to the beach, it's like this, boom, it's on, you know, like, so yeah. The conditions are way harder. And yeah, different format, four-man heats, everyone's hungry, everyone wants to make it. So yeah, it's a war zone, the jungle.
So this year you start without knowing that you're in, you actually go to pipe, right? I think you're already there and waiting to see if you get in or not.
I mean, I got the call like maybe a week before, because okay. One of the surfers that was on tour, he got a pretty bad injury. So I knew, but he pulled out only for the first two events. So I knew I was going to do the Hawaiian season. I was going to do pipe and sunset. Mm-hmm. And then he actually ended up not going to Portugal and Australia. So that's why I had the full shot until the cut. But now I have to make the cut.
Yeah. So everything, it's interesting, yeah. But it seems that you, yeah, it's all one step. But
it's good in a way, you know, because it makes you stay in the moment and not think too much, you know. And that's what you need, I feel like, in surfing. You need to stay in the moment, you know, wave by wave, turn by turn. If you get too much ahead, with me, I feel like you get lost and you don't do good.
So how did, in general, like you finally, because like you said, yes, last year you qualified, you didn't even do one heat. This year, how did it feel after that first event?
Well, first of all, I was so excited to surf a wave like pipe, you know, in a heat. I mean, first pipe master of my career, it was a dream. So I was really excited. A little bit of nerves because I hadn't competed pretty much in a year. So I was like, oof, you know, and that was the big league, but mostly excited. Honestly, I was super excited to finally get a shot, you know, and it was pumping. It was big the first day, big, big pipeline. So it was, yeah, there was a lot of nerves, let's say, but good nerves, you know, and it was a really, really good hit. Yeah, it was a really good hit, tight hit. And against my two friends, they're really good friends of me, you know. And ended up making it and felt good, you know. I was like, wow, you know, I deserve to be here, you know. I know I deserve to be here and I know I can beat these guys if I'm doing my thing. And so, yeah, now it's my time to show it. And I've been waiting this, you know, for this my whole life, so... That's why I fought so hard. That's why I came through adversity. I never gave up throughout all these years for these moments. So, you know, I got to enjoy a lot, you know, enjoy the most of it and try my best and have no regrets. That's the most important. If it doesn't happen, well, it doesn't happen, but at least give my best and have zero regrets so I can live in peace.
So now that you're a few events into the season, is it what you imagined it would be? Is it what you hoped it would be? What's the actual experience like versus what it was like in your mind?
Honestly, it's pretty damn good, huh? Living the tour life, the city life. I have a lot of friends, you know, on this tour. So I've competed against them since I'm young, you know, throughout the juniors, then the QS and stuff. So seeing them there, I was like, I need to go there too, you know, like I need to go there. And just a different lifestyle, different waves. You know, yeah, it's the dream tour. So I wanted to be there and actually I'm here and I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And I think I'll love it more when I make the cut.
So can you, for people who don't know, can you explain what a typical event is like? Cause you mentioned it's a 10-day window and you're trying to get in 4 days of surfing. So there's a lot of waiting around and things like that. Can you tell me a little, can you explain to people a little bit, what does it take to actually compete in an event and how does it work and how can you win one?
Well, you need 4 days of full competition, four full days of competition to go from the first round to the final. So in those 4 days, we have a 10-day waiting period. Every location we go. So it means we pretty much have 6 days of, you know, we can choose and pick. Sometimes it runs in the first 3 days, blah, 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 first 4 days. Depends on the conditions. But sometimes, let's say you can have your first round the first day, and then the second round, you can have it on the seventh day or something like that, you know. So there's a lot of, that's one of the hardest part for me, those four events. Because normally I'm used to go back to back. You know, I go sleep. The next day I know I'm having a heat. But now sometimes you're in a momentum, you're feeling good, you have a good day, boom, 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 you make hits, and then boom, you have to stop for 5 days and come back in 5 days because the waves are bad. And it kind of like, you know, you need to stay calm, but not too calm. It's that's the only thing I'm finding a little bit hard. But on another side, it's good because you're getting good waves. So that's pretty much it. And yeah, so you go first round, then there's an elimination round. Because first round, we are three man heats. The first two, they go straight to the third round. And the last one of the heat goes to the elimination round. And then the elimination round, again, three people, you can't be last. If you're last, it means that you're out of the event and you're pretty much the last place. So that's the worst thing you can do. And then the third round, round of 32, it's man on man throughout the whole. It's one against one. And it's all about the seeding of the... So if you're, let's say if you're 27th, you're going to get one of the top guys, you know? So it goes like that. And yeah, round of 32, round of 16, quarterfinals, semis, final. That's pretty much it.
And in the heat, they score your best two waves,
yeah,
right?
They score the best two waves on a total of 20 points. So each wave, 10 points. So yeah. So that's pretty much it. You can surf as many waves as you want, and the best two during 30 minutes, they're gonna be your total on 20 points.
Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, like there's a lot out of your hands in surfing, in the sense of you don't know what the probably even you can practice in conditions, and then immediately the waves change. I would assume it's the ocean. So how do you deal with that mental side of the sport, because so much is out of your hands?
Yeah, that's why we love and hate the sport so much. Honestly, it's the hardest sport because it's not like a tennis court, a soccer field. It's there, you know what I mean? It's there every day. You want to hit the ball like that, go ahead, boom 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 boom. Surf, it changes every second, the ocean, every second. So let's say you have a heat, you're watching the, let's say, two previous heats before your heat, you're watching the sea, you're watching the ocean, you're like, okay, I'm gonna do that. By the time of your heat, it's completely different. You know, you got to adapt to it. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't go your way. I've already lost heats against guys that are way worse than me, but they beat me because they catch the best wave of the heat. And I'm just a few meters away and can't catch the wave and, you know, stuff like that. So it's a whole different sport, you know, but I guess that's why we like it. That's why we love it. I don't know how do you say in English? It's ingrat, ingrat in French. You know, it's like, I don't know the word in English, but... yeah, it's a love and hate relationship.
Oh, okay. And when you, knowing that, when you go into a heat, do you already have in mind what you want to do, or is it pure instinct? Like, I'm curious, because do you plan for a wave? How does it work?
I mean, no, you plan your strategy for sure. You have a strategy, and especially when you work with a coach and stuff, you know what you want to do and stuff. But sometimes all your plan goes, you know... goes out to the trash, and you gotta go plan B, plan C, plan D sometimes. but no, you kind of know what you're gonna do depending on the conditions and what's, you know, who's in your heat and how to approach a heat. For sure, there's a lot of strategy going on, because look, most of the time it's pretty much the same guys winning, so it means that it's not only luck, you create your luck too, you know, you create the luck and all that. But yeah, it's a funny one.
Yeah, and it's also a judge sport. When I speak to gymnasts, when I speak to divers, these kind of sports where it's also a judge who gives them a number, they tell me sometimes it's really frustrating because they feel like they're not being judged right. And is that the case with you guys, or is it more straightforward?
No, it's honestly, if one thing, you know, could improve a lot in our sport is the judging, I think so. Because, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, you think you made the heat, the whole beach think you made the heat, everyone thinks you made the heat, but the five people up there think you didn't make the heat, so you didn't make the heat. You know, it's like, it's not precise enough yet. And I don't know how we can do it to get it super precise, because at the end of the day, it's just how they see what you did. Just them, not the rest of the world. Let's say the whole surfing world saw it one way, but they saw it another way. Well... that's it, you know? So it is frustrating sometimes. But it is what it is, and try to do your best, and I guess try to smash your opponent so you don't even leave it to the judges.
And recently you made the finals day in Portugal, if I'm not mistaken. What was that experience like? Because I think also you managed to have friends and family there and all that. Yeah. So how did that feel?
Well, it was amazing. It was pretty close from home. You know, Portugal is super close from Morocco. And so a few friends came over. My mom was there. My brother was there. So it was super cool. And yeah, I was feeling good. I was just coming back from my Olympic qualification, actually. I was in Puerto Rico where I came second, you know, second in the world. And I guess I brought this momentum to Portugal and I felt good there too. And yeah, I lost in the quarterfinals. It was a really slow heat, really bad waves. But I was so frustrated because I was happy to be there. But I knew I could do better, at least, you know, put up a nicer heat. But it is what it is. And I'm pretty happy with the beginning of my season. And I'm really excited that this one starts. And I really want to go hard here and do a big result. That's the goal.
So speaking of Puerto Rico, you managed to clinch a second qualification to the Olympics. So you're going to be in Paris this summer. You were also in Tokyo, which was the first time ever surfing was featured in the Olympics. So tell me about Puerto Rico. I feel like you've done there was a lot of surfing there, like a lot of heats and and you managed to get the silver medal at the World Surfing Games. So just tell me about all that. What was it like?
Well, you know what? It's like I started Pipeline. I finished ninth for my first city event. And then the next day, I didn't really talk about that, but the next day I dislocated my shoulder. So I had the next event 10 days after Sunset Beach, and I just had the wild card. You know, I just had the shot. I was like, there's no way I'm going to pull out of this event. You know, they're just giving me my shot. So I stayed pretty much 10 days on the couch with my shoulder completely blown out. Honestly, it was bad. And I went to my heat and sunset, strapped it and tried my best, but I was feeling very bad, really weak shoulder, really painful. And I lost anyway, I lost right away. And then I had Puerto Rico. So I said to myself, look, listen, there's a big event coming up. You cannot let it, you know, get into your head like you did at sunset. Okay, it's there, it's bad, but just push through it. And like you said, it was hard, but I'm proud of myself because I went, let's say, warrior mode fully because it was really painful. I had a really bad shoulder and I did 14 heats, you know, 14 heats. So that was really intense, really, really intense week. Maybe the most intense week of my life, honestly. I was all beat up at the end. My back, my shoulder, my neck, everything was destroyed. But I brought the silver medal and the Olympic qualification. So I was really, really happy and proud of myself there. It was a turning point, and it was pretty much the point. I was like, "Wow, all the hard work is for this. This is it. Voilà, this is your present, you know, right there." And honestly, when you think about it, it's all worth it. It's hard, and you know, when you're going through it, but when something that happens, the feeling is like, "Wow, it's so good, so good."
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell me about Tokyo. What were your standout memories from the Tokyo Olympics?
Well, Tokyo was nice because it was my first Olympic, you know, my first Olympic. So, you know, I was excited, but it was kind of a weird one because, you know, middle of COVID, masks, test every day. I couldn't stay in the Olympic Village because the surfing was on another place for like 2 hours away. It was a weird one. And the waves, honestly, they were pretty bad, pretty bad waves. But but as a whole, experience was amazing. It was amazing. I was the flag bearer for my country, which was, you know, the biggest thing.
Unbelievable. Oh, yeah. To have a surfer also, that's so, because surfing is, no one associates it with the Olympics. So that must have been cool.
Super cool. The whole moment was crazy. Honestly, it was crazy. And super proud too, you know, to raise my country's flag, Morocco, that high. And I wish I did better there, but I have my second chance now. And going to Tahiti on a wave like Tiopo, you know, it's like for it's like the most dangerous but most perfect wave on the planet. So as a surfer, it doesn't get much better than that. You know, you're scared but super excited at the same time. And I feel like that if we get good waves, it can be actually an amazing, amazing event.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, for those who don't know, actually, the surfing is not obviously going to be in Paris. It's going to be in Tahiti. But just back to Tokyo, I assume you had probably never been in any of those multi-sport games representing Morocco, right? Because like when I speak to swimmers, for example, they tell me, yeah, I know all the other Moroccans because we go to the Mediterranean Games or we go to this. But with you, probably that was that the first time you got to see the other top Moroccan athletes?
Yeah, it was my first time. It was my first time. Actually, I met a couple super cool athletes. And it was amazing to, you know, see all the athletes. I think we were quite a few. And no, it was nice. It was a nice vibe. But like I told you, I didn't stay with them. I just had 2 days at the Olympic Village and then I had to go to the other place. So I didn't really feel the whole Olympic Village thing, you know, which is amazing. Yeah. I just went 2 days and just, you know, walking around the village, seeing all the other athletes, you know, the NBA players, a couple NBA players were there. Like, it was super cool, super cool. And and I know, again, I'm going to be in Tahiti, so far away from Paris, but it is what it is.
It still counts. Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, I know. I guess so. And no, but yeah, it was super cool to meet all the athletes. And yeah, like you said, it was my first time.
Okay. And you're the first Moroccan and the first Arab to be doing what you're doing at that level, making it to CT, winning all these medals at the World Surfing Games, all that. How do you see that side of what you do? In terms of, you know, being the first is a unique thing. Not many of us can say that they know what it means to be the first at something. So I'm just wondering, how do you see that and kind of becoming a role model or becoming someone who people look up to and try to emulate and stuff like that? How do you see that side of what you're doing?
Well, first of all, like, I'm really proud, you know, I mean, by doing what I do, I've always done it, of course, for me, because it was my dream. So I've done it for me, for my family, and I've always been, you know, super proud of representing Morocco. I'm deep Moroccan at heart, and I love my country. And yeah, I was just, you know, I believed in my, you know, I chose to be a pro surfer when I was super young. So that was it. And I had to do a lot of sacrifice, you know, a lot of sacrifice. It wasn't that easy. You know, I lost my dad when I was super young. We had to go to France and all that with my mom. You know, my mom was super hard for her too. My brother was there too. Like, it was not an easy path, let's say. But I always had, you know, the opportunity to do what I do. Thank God. So yeah, you know, I had to grab it and go for it. So I made some sacrifices and I believed in me. It took me a lot of years. It took me a lot of years, but I never gave up. And I hope by doing all this, like you said, you know, it motivates the kids. Whatever they come from, you know, you can make it, I guess, you know, you can make it. Of course, in Morocco, you know, I wish we had a little bit more help for some of the athletes, because it's pretty tough, you know, especially, you know, depends from where you come from and stuff, but it's hard to get. It's a pretty expensive sport, let's say. It's a pretty expensive sport. So we have a lot of talent, not only in surfing in general. In Morocco, we have a lot of talent. We have it's just, you know, just finding a way to, you know, take that talent to another level. And that starts by going overseas and all that, you know. And I was lucky enough to go overseas while I was young. And yeah, but I capitalized on the chance I had, you know. They gave me a chance and I tried my best to make it into something. And I'm hoping I'm pushing the new generation and the people in Morocco, you know, to start surfing. Morocco, surfing is becoming pretty big in Morocco, honestly. You can see surfers from, like, all different social classes surfing. That's pretty cool. From, you know, all different classes, all different types of people are surfing in the main city, the big cities, everywhere now along the coast. And that's amazing. It wasn't like that before. So it's changing, you know, it's changing. Everybody is kind of realizing that we have, like, an amazing country with amazing waves. You know, why not enjoy it, you know? But my goal definitely is, you know, reaching the best, doing the best I can to reach my goals, personal goals in my career. And after that, I would love to go back to Morocco and carry on and give back to the Moroccan surfing community a little bit of my knowledge that I've learned all these years. And that's a goal for sure. And I'll be super proud to help the next Moroccan generation.
That brings me actually to my next question, because I wanted to go back to the very beginning and tell me a bit more about where you grew up and how you actually got into the sport.
Okay, so I grew up in Agadir. It's a city down south of Morocco. We used to go to Tarazout, you know, Imouran, Tarazout. It's like 15 kilometers away from Agadir, up north. Right now, it's pretty much connected to Agadir because it changed so much. But back then, it used to be wild still and empty. And my dad used to fish a lot. So me and my brother used to take us to the beach and just let us hang out there, play soccer and, you know, boogie board and stuff. So we were around the ocean since super young. And yeah, my brother started surfing before me. I was just playing around with the boogie board and while my dad was fishing. And then my brother told me, Rams, you should try surfing. And I tried to stand up on his board and I stood up pretty quickly, I guess. And I liked it. Instantly, I liked it. I was like, wow, this is fun, you know? And so, yeah, my dad managed to buy me a board with me and my brother, an old board, I remember. An old board, and we started surfing with it. And then 6 months later, I went up north to Surfland. Walidia, it's a surf school. Laurent Miramont is the owner of that surf school, and he's really the one that kind of like saw something in me and told my parents, I think your kid has something special, maybe. And I kept going every school holidays to that surf school. And that's where I really fell in love with the sport. You know, the whole thing it got intense. And then I did my first competition and I won. So they sent me to France and I did the competitions in France during the summer breaks. And I was doing pretty good. I was winning a lot of contests and stuff, even at the European scale. So I was like, well, maybe I can actually do something here, you know. And yeah, then unfortunately, I had a pretty the saddest moment of my life. My dad passed away, and we had to leave with my mom and brother to France. And since I was surfing, we went to the region, the southwest of France, Biarritz, and that's where I got into a school where I could do school in the morning and surf in the afternoon. That helped a lot, you know. So I was pretty much surfing every day, and. And yeah, from there on, I started going full on and got sponsors and went to the juniors and then the seniors. And then it took me a lot of years on the seniors to finally reach my goal to be on the CT. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
So the transition from, because you were a very good junior, like I looked at some of your stuff from when you were much younger. And that transition from juniors to being a proper professional, that must have been tricky.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, why was it particularly challenging?
Well, actually, like you said, I was a pretty good junior and everyone was expecting me to qualify, not fast, but not long after my junior career. And yeah, I guess, you know, being young, did some mistakes, got injured, a lot of injuries. And it took me a lot longer than what I expected. And but it is what it is, you know. I don't regret it at all. It is, you know, it was my path, and I enjoyed every bit of the journey. And everyone has its own journey. And I mean, I'm 30 years old. I'm still young. I'm feeling better than ever, physically, mentally, and I think in my surfing too. I'm surfing better than ever. So yeah, here I am. It took me a while, but I never gave up, and here I am.
So this sport, obviously, it can be dangerous. And I'm wondering, have you ever had like a very scary experience that kind of stands out to you, whether in training or whether in general, or how do you see it?
Well, yeah, it is a pretty dangerous sport, honestly. Yeah, I mean, I've broken a lot of stuff, you know. I've been injured a lot, honestly. I've had a lot of injuries, but nothing crazy, you know, like... never almost drowned or something like that. I've had a few close calls, you know, like scary calls, staying long under the water and thinking, oof, that's a bit too much here, but nothing crazy, you know. But it is dangerous. You can easily get hurt. Like, unfortunately, the guy I took the spot, you know, the guy that got hurt.
I saw the video.
Yeah, he was pretty much dead, you know, for 2 minutes. And they brought him to life. And he's a really good friend of mine, too. So that was kind of a weird one for me to take his spot, you know, like you don't want that to happen to anyone, you know, like. But yeah, it's dangerous. And this guy was young and at the prime of his career. He's a gnarly. And he, you know, just a bad hit. And it can go quick. So always got to be sharp. And no matter how trained you are, the ocean, you don't play with the ocean, you know. It's a different thing, you know. So, but I guess that's why we love it again, I swear. The challenge, you know, gets you excited. When it's big, you're so scared but excited, you know. You want to see how far you can go. How can you push your limits? Adrenaline kicks in, gnarly. So I like it. Honestly, I love it.
So I was reading one of your interviews and you were saying that one of your weaknesses would be airs. And you said one line actually stood out to me because you said, with all the injuries that I've had, I always think of the consequences. And that must be tricky, especially that you were also coming off an ankle injury and stuff. How do you how do you not let your injuries or that consequence creep in your brain while you're actually surfing?
Well, it's a hard one. Yeah, it's a hard one because nowadays, you know, like the younger ones, they come with all these crazy airs, like crazy, you know. And me, I grew up, you know, when Morocco and stuff, there was, I mean, I'm more of a power surfing guy, you know. I stay on the water and I just try to push hard and do big turns. That's my thing. I mean, I like to do airs, don't get me wrong, you know, sometimes here and there. But these kids, they do crazy stuff, you know. And when I see them do that, I'm like, wow, I don't know about that, you know, after all these injuries. I know I can do it sometimes, but I'm like, you know, you can easily get hurt, you know. And I'm not 20 anymore. Okay, I'm still young and fresh, but you know what I mean? Like, I've had enough, you know. So I'm just being smarter. But I don't think it affects me because, especially on tour, you know, like we surf pretty much, it's always powerful and kind of solid waves. So you can actually surf and, you know, do some really nice surfing on the rail and be powerful. So that kind of suits me well. And so, yeah, I don't think it affects me. Of course, I've already lost some heats that if I had a crazy air game, I would have pulled out a crazy air and made the heat. But it is what it is. I'm not that type of surfer. And my surfing got me all the way here. So it means I'm doing something okay.
You're doing very well for yourself.
Thank you.
So I know you're traveling without a coach, right, this year?
This year, yeah.
Yeah, so how come? Why is that a good choice for you?
I don't know. No, I mean, I had a good time with my coach that was with me for a few years. He's actually coming to the Olympics with me too. And he was in Puerto Rico too. And but I don't know, after the injury, I took the year off. I wanted to see to have a little change, see what I could do alone and stuff. And but yeah, just I'm traveling with some really good friends, and I'm staying with really good friends that are on tour with me. And having a good time, and I feel like I know what I have to do now, you know, after all these years. And just be in the moment, like I told you, and try to do your best.
Ramzi, how many languages do you speak? Because I feel like they're a lot.
I speak a few. I speak French, English, Arabic, Darija, you know, Moroccan, and Portuguese, Spanish. And I used to speak Dutch because my mom is from Holland, but I lost it a little bit, but I still understand everything. So, yeah, because I'm half Moroccan, half Dutch. Yeah.
But that must come in handy, having all these languages. You
can
speak to anybody on the tour.
It does. It does. Yeah. Like right now, I'm staying with my two really good friends. One is Portuguese and one is Brazilian. And I'm just being with them. I'm speaking with them in Portuguese, pretty much fluent. So that's cool. I'm even getting better at it. So, yeah.
That's impressive. So I watched a little bit of the docu-series on surfing that's on Apple Plus.
I don't know if you know it. Make or Break. Another one this year.
Are you in it?
I think I'll be in it, yeah. Normally.
Okay, cool. So it gave me, like, it's obviously I always like to watch surfing, but it kind of gave me a completely different understanding also of how things are.
Yeah.
And one of the impressions I got is that like it's really, really competitive, mm-hmm. but also you guys are quite friendly with each other. You share houses, like you're just saying right now.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit of what that culture is like? And now, especially that you're on the CT, like the guys you're probably staying with in the house are the ones you might be up against in heat. So how does it work?
Yeah, it's a weird one. But like I said, you know, we've been traveling since we're kids together. So, you know, we've competed against each other since we're kids. So, you know, we create a bond, you know, of course, a deeper bond with some of them. And that's why, you know, pretty much, I mean, when right now I'm staying with two friends that are like really like brothers to me. So, but we know that if we surf together in the heat, it's, you know, it's war, you know, we know it. So this is it. But yeah, you kind of have that surfing vibe, you know, being alone, all alone. I mean, it's not my thing, you know, like all alone, waking up, going surfing alone, eating alone. Like, no, you know, you want to enjoy the journey with friends and have a laugh. I like to crack jokes pretty much all day, so have a good time, and when it's time to work, it's time to work, you know, and just being able to switch on and off, but we can pretty much all do it, so that's super chill. That's not the worst part of the job.
What is the worst part of the job?
Losing. I guess losing.
I think every athlete will say that. Yeah.
I know.
So what are you like after, like, if you have a disappointing event, like, what are you like after? Do you mull over it a lot? Do you obsess? Do you let it go? How does it work?
Depends. Some I, you know, I get past, you know, I you know, I try to forget it pretty fast, and some stick around a little bit more, but I'm happy. Sometimes I'm having a hard time to, you know, just going to the next one and not think about the one I lost, but I'm working on that. Actually, I'm working on that, and the best thing to do is just forget it right away, and I mean, learn from it and forget it right away and go forward. But it's pretty hard to do sometimes, honestly, and I'm working on that.
What do you think this sport has taught you?
Well, I feel like, you know, surfing, you know, we learned, you know, we have good values, you know, as a surfer. I mean, not every surfer, but, you know, you grew up in a community, you know, it's all about respect, you know, respect towards the elders that surfed before you, first of all, towards the ocean, the environment. So the you know, the word respect is there from the start. And yeah, just good values, you know, being nice with people and traveling around the world, meeting, you know, a lot of people from different places, different cultures. It's amazing. You know, we are super lucky, you know, we've been living from our passion since we were a kid. Of course, comes with a lot of sacrifice, so it's not that easy all the time. But yeah, I feel like surfers, we're good people. I think so. That's what I like to
There
think.
Is this vibe of like you give you respect priority with waves, you share waves with others. You obviously, because it's dangerous, I feel like you always need to make sure that, you know, you take care of each other in the water as well. Like that's kind of the vibe I get.
Yeah, of course, but it's not like that everywhere, right? Especially I feel like it's maybe getting worse and worse because a lot of people are starting to surf. There's a lot of surfer in the world now. So, you know, there's this thing about locals everywhere you go. There's locals on this spot. And sometimes, and then there's beginners that come in. So sometimes the rules are not like the same for everyone. So sometimes it kind of gets messy a little bit. But I feel like if you're a good person, you know, even if you're a local, of course, I already got mad too in the water. Like everyone gets mad sometimes, you know, you let your emotion take over. But if you're a good person, try to calm down, try to explain to the guy that has been wrong, what he did wrong. If you're wrong, you try to say sorry and stuff like that. At the end of the day, we always get along somehow, you know, we find a way to get along. Mm-hmm. And like in general, I feel like the surfing community is, it's pretty... Yeah, we have good values, I feel like.
Okay. You mentioned the word sacrifice quite a few times, and I'm curious if you had to pinpoint some of What are the biggest sacrifices you had to make to make it in the sport?
The biggest sacrifice I had to make. Well, first of all, commit to something, you know, at a young age, even though it was my passion, but still, you know, it's not easy to say to your parents, okay, look, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going for it, you know. I'm going for it. And leaving your family from a young age, you know, going all around the world, being alone. You know, of course, it's amazing and stuff, but sometimes you miss home. You know, you get back home 1 week, boom, you got to go again and stuff like that. So you don't really have that, you know, that home family vibe a lot, you know. You're always on the go, on the run, boom, boom, here and there. So that part is kind of hard, I feel like, sometimes when you're young, you know. And especially me, I didn't have my mom and brother traveling with me a lot. And so, yeah, but I liked it too, you know, to be alone sometimes, grow up faster, I feel like. Of course, you do a little mistake here and there, but you learn. It's life, you know, part of the journey. And yeah, I'd say these type of sacrifices, you know. Of course, people might think it's not that hard and stuff, but yeah, no. And train a lot, go surf every time, whether the ocean is stormy, windy, cold, whatever you want to call it. You're out there, you got to practice while everyone is in bed and or somewhere, you know, somewhere hot, you got to go. Yeah, it's a job, you know. It's not just playing around and stuff. And full athlete life. And it's becoming more and more like that, you know. More and more like that. Back then, you know, the surfer was like kind of a, you know, a rock star, you know. Yeah, surfing, partying, whatever, you know. Right now it's more of a, you know, athlete vibe and working hard to reach new levels and pushing the sport. And that's why you're seeing the sport of surfing going so big today. It's reaching levels which, you know, it's pretty huge.
That's true. I feel like there's kind of the stereotype around surfers that you guys just go surf and you chill, but you work hard, right? Like how much training do you put in?
You work super hard, super hard. I feel like it's changing, that stereotype you said, but still there sometimes, you know. Yeah, you're a surfer, you cool, you know. No, we work hard. Like we have a full program. If you want to beat these guys on this tour, you got to work out. You know, talent, of course, yes, but it's the level is so high today, you know. You have to put in the work. So, the schedule is pretty solid. Look, like I've been home maybe, let's say, 3 days since the beginning of the season. Yeah. It's been almost four months. I'm going to go home maybe for like 2-3 weeks. That's the biggest break, and then boof, go again. You know, it's nonstop. Events, training, event, training, event, training. So yeah, it's pretty intense.
Okay. So you guys have, I think Kelly Slater is over 50 now, right?
I have it in my heat here. He's with me.
Yeah.
I'm surfing against him.
So obviously, you know, the GOAT, and he's 52, I think, or something. Do you see yourself just surfing through your 50s? Is that something you can imagine doing yourself?
At this level? Don't think so. But surfing for sure. I hope I'll be surfing until my body, you know, gives up. That's the goal.
But competing, do you think you can, like, even if it's at not this level, because it's, like you said, it's kind of a grind, right?
If it's not this level, no way I'll still be competing at 50. No chance.
So how come he's doing it? That blows my mind.
He's a freak. He's a freak. It's crazy. It's not even about surfing. He's like one of the best athletes of all time. Athletes. Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, they all say it. They talk about Kelly as one of the best, maybe the best athlete of all time. It's crazy what he's done. The guy is 11 world titles or 12 world titles. He's 52. He's still battling with us. 52. He's battling with 20-year-old crazy surfers. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
That is impressive.
You know?
So what do you think he's brought to the sport?
He's brought that athlete vibe, you know? This whole athlete vibe, because he came from the, you know, back then, that was rock star life, you know? All the other surfers, they were like surfing, partying, rah, you know? Having fun. And he was already doing this athlete the whole athlete series thing that we are doing now, he was doing it 20, 30 years ago without saying to anyone, keeping it quiet, you know? And that's why, look, that's why he killed pretty much everyone on the process, you know? That's why he was so good, and that's why he's still fit and able to do the stuff he does at his age. The guy is so fit, you know, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. So right now, Morocco's is doing great in sport, with whether the men's football, the women's football. You have so many also, because while I'm making this project, I'm looking into so many different Olympians and people going to the Olympics. You actually have break dancers going from Morocco. You have a skateboarder going from Morocco. Like, you really have got it all covered.
Yeah.
and I'm curious, couple of things. First of all, what does it mean for you to be part of this current era of Moroccan athletes who are really doing well on the global stage?
It's amazing. Honestly, it's amazing. Gonna start with the soccer. You know, I just qualified for the CT in 2022, and I went straight to the World Cup in Doha, and I went straight to the game against Spain, and then Portugal and France. It was amazing. It was amazing seeing that, you know, seeing this vibe, and you know, where the Moroccan national team, you know, all the emotion they brought to us was crazy. And it kind of fired me up too, you know. I was like, wow, I wish I can, you know, I can give this type of emotions to the Moroccan people as well and try my best, you know, even though it's a whole different sport. But still, you know, and like you said, we have a lot of type of athletes now from different sports. And I'm actually excited to meet a lot of them and super proud to be of, you know, like I told you earlier, we have talent. I swear we do. We have crazy talent. It's just about, you know, taking the talent into making it into something, you know, and it's a whole process to do that. But I feel like we could have even more champions, you know, and hopefully it's going the right way. Inshallah.
And were there athletes, whether from inside your sport or out of surfing, that you admired growing up or even now you follow, where you can draw inspiration from?
From home, you mean?
Anywhere. Any athlete, whether in surfing or out, from home or anywhere else.
Well, my favorite surfer was Rob Machado. So that's the guy I wanted to surf like. And then as an athlete, I swear I was a Kelly fan. I've always been a Kelly Slater fan when I was young. And athletes, you know. I mean, I loved soccer. I was playing soccer back then. So I have a few soccer players that I like, and a lot of them, actually. I was a Messi fan back then, but now I'm more of a Cristiano fan now. I switched it. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. I switched it. I like Cristiano, his vibe now, his energy. Honestly, it's amazing. And
okay. What's the mindset like entering this Olympics? Because you've already done it once now, you've had the experience once, going into this one, what would make it a successful Olympics for you?
Winning the gold.
That's it.
That's it.
All right.
I mean, yeah, that's what I want to do, honestly. That's the goal.
And that's good. And beyond the Olympics, what do you aspire to do in the sport?
Beyond the Olympics, I mean, like I told you, I want to push this career as much as I can, as far as I can, trying to enjoy as many years I can on tour and try to do my best to reach my own personal goals and until the wheels fall off, like we say, until the body doesn't go anymore, and then go back home and try to give back, you know, give back to the community and pass on some knowledge. Inshallah, that's the plan.
Inshallah. Are you based in Morocco or are you based in France?
Yeah? I'm based in Morocco.
And hopefully you make the cut. I wish you luck this coming weekend. But in general, if just in terms of for people who don't know, if you don't make the cut, what do you do?
I will.
You will make the cut. I don't want to put you in that mindset. You will make the. But those who do not make the cut, what would they do?
They go back to the challengers.
Go back, and they try to secure a spot again.
For 2025.
And like, how many spots can you? Or
10? So the 10 best of the challengers go up, and the 10 last of the ones that get cut go down.
Okay,
that's
it. I get it. Well, good luck.
Thank you so
I
much,
really
Rin.
Hope
Thank
to
you.
Make it. And good.
It was nice to meet
and
you.
And yeah, thanks so much for your time.
Yes.
You
Take care. Bye.
I loved getting to know more about Ramzi and surfing as a sport in general. In such a physically and mentally demanding discipline, he has managed to keep his head up despite suffering numerous setbacks and has blazed the trail for Moroccan and Arab surfers by making it to the highest level of competition. We'll be taking a short break before returning with new episodes of Abdul next month. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to check out our previous conversations on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.